2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. And boy, am I excited this week. We just came off of an awesome week of NASCAR. I took down the FanDuel $5 Intimidator contest for NASCAR for my share of $20,000. Along with a fellow DFS Army member, and over on DraftKings, we had a member win over $80,000, including the $75,000 prize for the $10 piston. Took it by himself. Unlike me, he decided not to tie. And awesome news for him. Just a great week for the Army. Looking forward to parlaying it into this week. I know that there was no podcast last week as I was live on location at Quail Hollow, having a good time at the Wells Fargo Championship. And I'm back here with you guys, getting ready for the Players Championship and Sawgrass. But first, let me tell you that if you want to join our awesome DFS Army team, very tight-knit community, and if you want access to all of our premium data, including the recently renovated PGA Research Station that is just looking phenomenal this week, lots of tools to help you research, and I'll be referencing that as I go through the podcast. If you want access to all of this, please join us at DFSArmy.com and use promo code TACO on sign up. You can find a link in the description. Believe me, after this podcast, you're going to want to come and become a member. Come chat with us and our coaches. We have a good time over there. Let's look at this field here. This is one of the most iconic courses in all of golf. Definitely has the most infamous hole in golf, the Island 17. Yeah, I'm talking about TPC Sawgrass from Ponte Vedra, Florida. Home of the Players' Championship and the largest prize pool in all of golf, over $10 million at stake. So all of the best golfers in the world are here, every single one of them. Perhaps one of the strongest fields in the entire PGA Tour year, at least of the full field cut events. It's right up there with the majors and perhaps even stronger with all this money on the line. Everybody wants their share of it, and this is quite the player's course. It is a 7,189-yard par 72 that was recently renovated last year. Sort of like how Quail Hollow was renovated for this year. Last year, we got to see the new look at TPC Sawgrass. And if you look at the new yearly results tab on the research station, you can see that the winning score last year and just the average score overall completely changed from years past. Going back a few years, you had winners with 16 under, several in a row that won at 13 under, Fowler won at 12 under, and Jason Day, who won at 15 under the last year of the course before the redesign there. Last year, we had kind of an obscure winner, Siwoo Kim, win at only 10 under. The years before, in 2016, the course played just a hair over par. Same happened in 2015. 2014 played almost a half stroke over par. And then back in 2013, 2012, it was playing about a stroke over par. And if you go back to 2010, the course actually played under par. But last year it played almost four strokes over par. It is considerably harder. And the way the course is sort of set up with lots of water hazards, lots of giant sand traps, it's really a course that anyone can get into trouble at. There's lots of variants at this course, and that is just especially more so now that it is a lot harder. Last year we saw more bogeys and double bogeys than we had seen in several years at this course. Not as many birdies as well. Usually this course averages about 11 birdies per player, 12 birdies per player in 2016, down to 10 birdies per player last year in 2017. The course is just gotten a lot harder. If you look at what correlates with good success in fantasy scoring here, It's just looking at it, you can look at the results by strokes gained tab, another new one on here, and you can see that strokes gained approach, clear and away, just correlates to fantasy scoring so well, and average finishing position. Very good stroke gainers off of the tee come in at about 60th place on average, as where guys who are gaining strokes approach, their average finish, 30.4, average 70.9 fantasy points. That's over 20 more fantasy points than the guys gaining strokes off the tee. The guys gaining strokes around the green are considerably worse. And something that's also kind of sticking out compared to other courses is that putting actually seems to matter here a reasonable amount. Usually it doesn't matter much at all, and heck, sometimes we even look towards bad putters since that status, so full of noise. But this week, really good putters tend to do very well here. But it seems to be all about the ball striking and just staying out of trouble. If you go on the historical performances tab, you can see exactly what stats correlate with fantasy scoring. And right now, easily the number one stat would be strokes gained approach, followed by greens and regulation, and then strokes gained putting, then a giant fall off for any other stat. And I know last week you needed just a really good off the tee game. This week it is just not the case at all. Driving distance has no correlation with success here. If you look at the top 30 fantasy point performances since 2010, none of these guys hit over 300 yards off of the tee, except for Jason Day in 2016, who put up the most fantasy points of anybody and did it without scoring eagles or getting the all four under 70 bonus for 5 points. It's huge because he only birdied three times, only bogeyed three times. It was amazing what he did back then in 2016, and a lot of that had to do with him not only driving the ball far, but hitting tons of greens of regulation and just putting the lights out, along with hitting the green just nonstop, gaining tons of strokes approach. Looking at the top 20 fantasy performances, really you can even go back to like the top 25, 30, just all of the top fantasy performances outside of Martin Laird in 2012, who finished runner-up. All of these other guys are gaining at least 3/4 of a strokes approach, if not 1 or 2 strokes approach. By far the most important category for top tier performances. We don't see people gaining strokes off the tee or around the green, and putting's kind of a mixed bag. We've had some guys lose strokes putting and do well here, like Kevin Chappell back in 2016 or Sergio Garcia back in 2015. So for the stats that we are looking for this week, I've got a newer stat. I've ran this out in the Euro content a few times, but one of the key things I did in the changes to the research station was adjusting everything by field strength. And I ran a really nice algorithm to determine how strong a field is. And it's based on players' long-term field rank. And ultimately, the stat I come to is adjusted field rank. And what that means is, on average, the percentage of a given field that a player beats adjusted by strength of field. So looking at Jason Day, 83% average field rank. On average, he performs better than 83% of the golfers in a given field. And that is ever so slightly adjusted for an average field strength, which in his case would be the fields herein are 3.4% harder than your average PGA Tour golfer. And that's something that I don't see being done a lot. That's really important because the way that most people look at the statistics, strokes gained at the Corrales Punta Canas are weighted equally to strokes gained at the Masters, and that just really shouldn't be the case. Also, with our longer-term numbers, the top 50, top 40, top 30 percentages, those have been reduced to only full field events, so it gets rid of some of the noise of the no-cut contests where top 50s really aren't a big deal. And of course, you've seen the rollout from the last couple of weeks where we've broken down stroke scanned approach into long irons, irons, and wedge shots, something very important to look at. We've also done a slight adjustment to stroke scanned on the season, and it's similar to our older scoring model if you've been with us for a while, just comparing the player's strokes gained, instead of just taking the raw strokes gained, we look at the strength of the field. We also look at the field averages, as, you know, different stats are different courses. Some courses, we gain a lot of strokes approach. If we look at the yearly results, we actually seem to lose about 0.2 strokes approach per player here at this course. Approach game, or the approach game and putting, very easy to lose some strokes here, as we're off the tee around the green. Those come in at about normal for a PGA Tour event, but since this course is slightly harder than other courses, we're going to be losing some strokes on average. But just lots of tools that you guys can use to see what the trends are here. Some more trends that I should mention: the average driving distance from the last 2 years, just a huge bump up from years past, and I think this has to do something with just how the PGA Tour has moved along. But it used to be average driving distance 284, 284, 283, 285. Now we're at 291 and 289 in the last 2 years. Players are hitting it a little bit longer off of the tee. Driving accuracy remains pretty steady, around 61-62%. And greens regulation percentage, usually around 63% every year. Took a bit of a nosedive last year. 60.8% of greens hit in regulation, just the course getting a little harder there. It's really nice to be able to look at the yearly trends on each course and see just what the story is and what correlates with success here. And moving right along from that quick course breakdown here, just want to talk about some other stats that really come to mind here. There's a stat on the PGA Tour website. I'm going to reference the greens irregulation percentage from fairway bunkers. It's really the only way that fairway bunker proximity or whatever has really been shown through these green irregulation stats, because we don't have a ton of data to work with so far this year. But this is going to be something really important to look at, because a lot of these holes at Sawgrass are lined with these humongous bunkers that run all the way around the green. Players hit from the sand more often than usual here at this course, and just looking at the greens regulation percentage from the fairway bunkers, you've got a few key names up top. Jordan Spieth leads the tour, followed closely by Henrik Stenson. A few other notable names that I'm really liking seeing here: Ricky Fowler and Nick Watney in the top 10, along with Gary Woodland and Justin Rose, Zach Johnson, all very good at hitting out of the fairway bunkers. Leishman, Finau, Kizire as well, very good. But if you look towards the bottom of the league, guys who are struggling a lot, and not including people who just have low sample size here, Tyrrell Hatton, man, fairway bunkers are just a death sentence for him. Kevin Kisner struggles. We see Dustin Johnson actually struggles a little bit with these. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Jason Day, Brendan Steele. Just something to look at. You guys should look at that as well. Not something that usually comes into play, but something that this course in particular has that's very unique to this course. These giant fairway bunkers that almost remind you of the church pews at Oakmont, but a little different, more of just massive, huge swaths of sand. And along with that, of course, you've got the iconic water, and what water does to a course, it just adds variance. That, along with the strength of the field here, no clear favorite, we can see it with the odds. No one's above 14-1. Lots of guys in the 14, 15, 16-1 range this week. I mean, really good guys like Mickelson and Stenson around the 30-1 range. Tiger Woods almost 40-1. So really interesting to see how things will be different here. And this is generally a very high variance course. Looking at people's track histories here, you know, you've got some guys that are very, very good and consistent year to year, like Stenson, who just can blow up at any time. Jason Day finished 126 in 2015, followed that up with a win the following year, then almost MDF'd in 2017, and had missed the cut in 2012 as well. Came sixth in 2011, and then 2010 finished 113th. I mean, this course is just, it's, anyone can miss the cut here, and key strategy we're going to know coming in GPP, if anyone is even remotely chalky, you just want to fade him, because anyone can just get blown away with the harder course and just the, you know, high variance nature of the hazards. So now we have a pretty good idea of what we're looking for here. Good ball strikers, you know, somewhat accurate, or guys who are somewhat accurate off of the tee. Distance doesn't matter, but a little bit of driving accuracy really doesn't hurt. But most importantly, hitting them greens are regulation. It's what we're looking for this week, along with a good, just good overall metrics, the good adjusted field rank. Fantasy points per hole is huge. Not as huge this week, since this week is a bit more about survival, since I would reckon that the 6 out of 6 rates are going to be pretty tragic. You know, looking at last year, we had some key guys miss the cut. Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, some key MDFs like John Rahm, Bubba Watson missing the cut, Mark Leishman missing the cut, Kuchar missing the cut, Horschel, Tony Finau missing the cut every year here. It's harder for the studs than normal. We're not going to be able to put our eggs in the same basket as much as we do. Don't get married to any one guy this week, and you can definitely mix it up in the Domination Station lineup optimizer. You can set about a max percentage of like 20% for everyone in this field and just get a real good mix. Maybe even put in a lot of uniques, because really anything could happen at this course. We want to have low-owned guys, and we don't want to make huge stands on guys, because anyone can just hit the water at any time. So getting into the player pool here, we've got all the studs in play, starting off with Rory McIlroy, who's the most expensive on DraftKings, fourth most expensive on FanDuel. So the pricing discrepancy may help you make some cross-site hedging possible, but also change the ownership between different sites as well. You're going to see Rory be a little bit more chalky on FanDuel than you would on DraftKings, where he's the most expensive guy. But his track record here, 2013 and beyond, is pretty solid. Lots of top 10 finishes, but a few missed cuts in 2012, 2010. Been on a roll lately. The Wells Fargo is one of his best courses last week at Quail Hollow. Finished 16th there, which is all right for him. You know, about average, a little bit underwhelming. I know when a 16th place finish is underwhelming, then you're quite the course horse, but that was the case last week. Finished 5th at the Masters, did very well there. Before that, we saw him win the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but missed the cut at the Valspar. Now, it seems like you would want to correlate the Valspar and like the Honda Classic as, you know, these less than driver courses. Since this is, I guess, you could consider this an accuracy course, but you know, the average driving distance here isn't like in the 260s, 270s like you would see at true less than driver courses, because this is a par 72. There are four par fives, and you know, if you look at the fantasy scoring stats and the fantasy points per hole types, we've got a wide variety of these hole types. There's not one that really sticks out a ton. The most we have on any given type of hole is we have four long par fours, and that's actually a pretty small number compared to your average course. But going back to Rory here, playing pretty well, of course. He's one of the best players in the world, just very expensive this week. Might not be too popular, especially with a few guys like Jason Day coming off the win, Spieth coming up or off the top of a couple of top five finishes, and Dustin Johnson at a real discount. I think Rory is going to be somewhat lower owned, definitely have more ownership in the higher dollar contest. That is usually the trend with Rory McIlroy. And just if you go by the adjusted field rank, 75% for Rory, 80 to 85% just on average for every other stud. So a bit of a difference there, and it's not like he's been playing in stronger fields. All these studs play in fields that are 3 to 4% stronger than your average PGA Tour golfer. And if you do go back a little bit farther, you see that Rory has had some struggles, just, you know, with his missed cuts this year, and had a bit of a struggle last year at times. But of course, he can turn it on at any time. And just think back to when he won the Tour Championship, he was just putting up good performance after good performance. I kind of would have liked to see a little bit more from him from the Wells Fargo, but you know, T16, that's not really too much to cough at there. I saw Rory. He was right behind Justin Thomas. On Wednesday, I went to the practice rounds, the Pro-Am. Followed a few guys around. A lot of them were really nice, signing autographs for people, high-fiving the kids. Rory just kind of ran past everyone. Like, he was staying laser-focused. He didn't want to participate a whole lot like some other guys did, but you know, I can't really complain. I might have done the same thing in his shoes. And I've heard from other people he's actually really nice, so I don't know. You know, going to the event at Quail Hollow kind of changes your opinions on some people just about how nice they are. Like, it's hard for me to not love some guys that I'll talk about them later, but there's just some guys you meet and it's like, man, you get a little biased towards them. I'm already biased towards Stenson. I need to get rid of these biases, but you know, it is nice to be able to see the players up close and personal. I'm also going to be going to the memorial later this month. Wish I could go here to Sawgrass, but this is quite the trip away in Florida. So Rory McIlroy, love him in GPP, I guess, but you know, in cash, I wouldn't go that route. Definitely go with one of the cheaper studs here. Jason Day, looking awesome so far this year. Hasn't had a bad finish yet. He's been kind of playing sporadically, but really he's posted himself in the top 20 at a similar rate to Justin Thomas here, and that win last week was just very impressive. I had concerns going in with him with his long iron play, but it didn't turn out to be that huge of a factor. And this year, or this week, you can see that the exact type of approach metrics don't really matter as much as some other weeks. It just matters about the strokes gained approach overall is what matters by far the most here. And he's still losing strokes approach. That's why I have a bit of concern using him. He's more of a guy that gains all of his strokes putting and then some off the tee. A good around the green game, but we didn't see around the green really correlating that well with results here. But putting, yes, I will take the good putting. He's always a good putter. And he's had a mixed bag of results, like I said earlier. Vaughn 2016, horrible miscut in 2015, almost MDF'd last year. Day is going to be popular with a really nice game log. Everyone remembers he won last week, and it was a pretty good victory. But I'm probably not going to be going that route. Jordan Spieth, $11,000. A couple of third-place finishes for him in a row, Houston and at the Masters. We haven't seen him since the Masters. This is definitely a place where he can succeed. His greens regulation percentage better than any other stud, even over guys like Stenson, 72% on the season. And his strokes gained approach numbers are beautiful. Just destroying it with the wedge. That's always been Spieth. The short game's just right. The problem here is he has three missed cuts in a row at this track. But he debuted fourth in 2014, so not really sure what to make of things there. If his course history pushes him towards being, you know, unpopular, then I would like Spieth a lot more. It's just that people are going to see the two third place finishes in a row in the game log, and everybody knows Jordan Spieth. I think people are going to be playing him. He's not going to be crazy. He's not going to be crazy unpopular at all to the point where we could leverage him. So I don't really know about Spieth this week. I'm not huge on him, but I know a lot of people that are. I'm just going to be going towards, I'll say it right now, going to Justin Thomas here, $10,800. He also missed the cut here last year by a stroke, but third in 2016, 24th in his debut in 2015. He's been awesome this season, pretty much a permanent fixture in the top 20. Hits the ball so clean. The best fantasy points per hole scoring of any of the studs. Very good at longer par fives, and there are a couple of those here. Like, very, very good at them. Really just good at all things par four scoring. That's also going to be key here at a par 72. Strokes gained approach, similar to Jordan Spieth, right there. Almost gaining one stroke per round approach. All of his irons are dialed in, just left to right. Justin Thomas just hits all of the marks this week, and he's someone that I'm going to be using a lot. Probably either going to use him in cash, or I'm going to just be using him as one of my core GPP plays. Although last week we saw that Thomas broke that 20% ownership mark that he wasn't really breaking so far this season. The word's definitely out with him, and he's going to be popular again this week, but I don't really mind because I think he's my favorite stud out here. Except for maybe, of course, the guy I'm going to talk about next here, Dustin Johnson, $10,300. 12-2 on FanDuel, that's a more appropriate price there, almost the most expensive right behind Spieth. 16-1 odds here for DJ, probably the lowest I've seen him at in quite some time. He's still, you know, he leads the entire field in adjusted field rank, 86%. I mean, he's the best golfer in the field, certainly, trying to hold on to his world number one position. Now, he never had great success here, but he wasn't really one to miss cuts either. He just had 3 or 4 years in a row there where he either came close to MDFing or just didn't do well in the second half of the event, the withdrawal in 2013, but 28th in 2016, 12th last year, kind of turning things around there. And he's really just come into form as being the best golfer in the world. And he's coming in at such a discount. And, you know, it's, we saw him at the RBC Open, RBC Championship there, after the Masters. Finished 16th there at a course that really was not for him. It's a course that, even though it was close to his hometown, he never played there because it's one of those less-than-driver courses you wouldn't expect him to do too well at. But he did all right for being a place where, you know, his style doesn't really help him. And I know that driving distance doesn't matter here, and that directly hurts DJ. You definitely want to target him at the bomber courses, but nonetheless, he's still just a very good price here. I think he's going to be popular just because, you know, he's getting close to that four-digit range, which is just unheard of for DJ. So definitely like him here. Ricky Fowler, $9,600. That is a very fair price for him. He has been, he either finishes top two or he finishes like 60 or the worst. That's been the trend of his. He has a lot of missed cuts, and they're all by like one stroke. He has, from 2011 to 2016, he had 4 missed cuts by one stroke exactly, and also a win and a second place finish. Very confusing course history with Mr. Ricky Fowler. 60th last year, and this year he's been cruising, had an awesome swing season, struggled a little bit early on the season, and has come into form, runner-up at the Masters. Tied with JT last week for 21st at the Wells Fargo Championship, a place where he also plays really well. So that could have been better, but overall, he doesn't really have weak points in his game. He gains strokes everywhere. Not as many, you know, approach strokes gained as guys like Spieth or Thomas, but doesn't really have any holes in his game. Someone I'm thinking about in cash. It's really not a week where you consider course history super heavy in cash like you would some other weeks, and really the only guys that are true course horses here up in the stud range are Sergio and Stenson, who have had some very questionable form recently. So Ricky Fowler is someone to consider for cash, honestly, because he's just been that kind of guy this year. John Rahm, $9,300 would be a good price for him, but if you go by the odds, it's not really the case. 24-1, fourth at the Masters last time we saw him. Hasn't been playing a ton this year, but when we've seen him, he's done generally well. MDF last year, after starting off really well, just the wheels fell off for him here. I think he was going for like his first missed cut on tour or something, sort of like Cantlay, but still adjusted field rank second only to DJ in this entire field. 70% of greens hit in regulation. Only problem with him is he is losing almost half a stroke approach each round, and that sucks a lot. It's not what we're going for here at all. And him being the bomber type of golfer, it's also something we're not really all that looking for here. Although with the 60% driving accuracy, it's not terrible. It's not like he's just a pure bomber spraying it everywhere. Yeah, the green and regulation metrics are good. I just don't like his approach game. That's not really gonna put me on Rahm with just where the research is pushing me. Justin Bros, sort of the same story, but to a lesser extent. He's at least gaining the smallest amount of strokes approach, but it's not comparable to some of these other studs. The adjusted field rank is, though, that is right there with the best of them. He's had an awesome year so far. No missed cuts yet, although he did have kind of a crappy performance at the Houston Open. And here, like a lot of other players, mixed bags, 65th, 19th, 76th, 4th, 89th. Real up and down course history here, usually leaning towards the bad part. He's someone that I usually would play in cash, but here I just have, I've lots of concerns with people in cash. It's very easy to get dissuaded this week from playing a guy. Rose, you know, he's had some good finishes lately, but those are at tracks that he's just phenomenal at, like the Masters. So, I'm not all that much on Rose here. At $9,000, you can get Sergio Garcia, and that would be an excellent discount if it weren't for his last two finishes. He just had quite the blow-up trying to defend his Masters victory. Finished, I think it was third to not the dead last, but third to last in the field, 82nd at the Masters, just embarrassing. And then followed that up with a miscut by multiple strokes at the Texas Open. Before then, he was rolling. He was on quite the roll. And like I said, he's one of the few guys here that is a course horse here. Nothing but made cuts in the last decade. Runner-up in 2015, third in 2014, eighth in 2013, 12th in 2011. If you go back to 2009 and 2008, he was runner-up in 2009 and won in 2008. Has a very good track record here that goes back a ways. That makes me really like him for GPP, since he's probably going to be the lowest of any of the guys, or lowest owned of any of the guys I've talked about so far, with his two horrible missed cuts in a row. And, you know, if you go by the stroke scanned approach metrics, he's got the best of anyone that we've spoke of so far. So give me some surge in GPP. I'm all about that. Paul Casey is $8,900. I think he was that price last week as well. Turned things around after the miscut at the RBC Heritage. Fifth place finish at the Wells Fargo. Looking beautifully so far outside of that one missed cut at the RBC. Sponsors kind of, you know, had to be there. I don't know if his heart was in it completely, but that, it was just so unlike of him to miss the cut by multiple strokes there. Seemed like a place where he would do great at, and that was his first cut that he had missed in 30 attempts, dating all the way back to the Sony Open of 2017. So Casey is usually the beacon of consistency here, and at this track, he's finished 22nd and 23rd in the last 2 years. The two times before that, he withdrew. Interesting there, but stats very comparable to all the other studs, and gaining strokes almost equally in every category, and just a little bit more so in approach than the other metrics, just not near the likes of Sergio and Stenson as far as like gaining tons of strokes approach. But he's just a very safe cash game play. I would play him in cash for sure. That's pretty much where he belongs there. Not a lot of real safe cash studs here, and in cash I do like going with a more mid-range core here, since I'm not too huge or sold on any stud up top. Just a lot of question marks there. I think Casey is one of the ways you can go there for sure. Then a guy I love, my Henrik Stenson, $8,800, 11-6 on FanDuel, very expensive on FanDuel. He's turned things around. I know he's missed a ton of cuts lately. He used to be the beacon of consistency, made all of his cuts for 2 years in a row. Now if you go back 2 years, he's only made 60% of his cuts. Real bad number there. Adjusted field rank is 71%. It's pretty low, but everything else, the driving accuracy, greens and regulation, best of anyone that we've talked about so far, and stroke scanned approach, also the best of anyone in the entire field. He is gaining almost 1.5 strokes approach per round, losing strokes around the green, which is fine, and gaining a third of a stroke putting, and of course he gets them off the tee, stroke scanned, all because of his driving accuracy. This is one of his best courses. The Valspar would be there, but he just missed the cut at the Valspar by multiple strokes before getting on that small run of top tens. And this is a place where, in 2016, he broke a very good streak of good finishes and finishing almost dead last in the field. Did the same thing back in 2011. If you go back further, so you finished 16th here last year. Missed the cut horribly in 2016, four very good finishes in a row, dating back to 2011, where he had that horrible miscut. In 2010, he either just snuck by or MDF'd with a 71st place finish there. Going back to 2009, he was the winner here at the Players' Championship. And also, a few other good finishes. If you go back through 2006, he is a staple in the top 10. Good, almost a comparable course history to Garcia, except for those couple of blow-up years. One of his best courses, and I've been holding him for one and done. This is where I'm playing him. I regret not playing him at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where he had that insane track history there, and he finished fourth. And really, it's been the catalyst that's turned his season around. Statistically, he's exactly what we're looking for here. And I don't have much more to say about Stenson. You know I'm biased. I'm going to play Stenson like every week. But he really does make, or his success here has made a lot of sense if you just consider what it is that Stenson does well. Patrick Reed, $8,700. $11,400 on FanDuel. A bit more appropriately priced there. Yeah, the man is on a roll. Four top 10 finishes in a row. He had had questionable form going in through the swing season, but he is looking absolutely fine now. He's your Masters winner. Followed that up last week while being grouped with Tiger. He actually played it pretty cool. I love following Woods and Reed there in that little grouping. People were saying the darndest things to Tiger, and Reed was just rolling through all the punches. It was a good time. I kind of really like this play a lot, and I've been so anti-Reed lately. Like, just every top 10 finish he gets, I'm just like, nope, he's gonna go back to missing cuts or something. But this is especially a place where, man, if you're telling me strokes gained off the tee don't really matter here, and, you know, approach game and the putting game matters. I know it's his around the green game where he gains the most strokes, but still, that's Reed's bread and butter. If you just don't worry about off the tee metrics with him at any track, Reed is always going to look better. So I really like Reed. I don't know about cash. I'd consider it in cash, honestly. For GPP, he makes a really good play. Not sure how popular he's going to be. He has some guys like Stenson and Woods around him that could, and especially Casey, who will take some ownership away from him. But kind of liking Reed there. Then we've got big boy Tiger himself. Got me the Tiger fist bump. Kind of an awkward story. I was going for it. Figured he would just ignore me like everyone else, but he went for it. And I had already retracted a little bit. Had to lean right back and fight for that little fist bump. Ended up hitting pinkies, and you know what? I'll take that. I touched Tiger Woods, and I haven't washed my hands since, obviously. I don't know if that's true or not, but he's your winner here in 2013. If you recall, before all the troubles in his life here, he's been very good, very, very good at Sawgrass. If you remember his better than most call that happened here, right at this very course, some iconic moments for Tiger. And, you know, last week wasn't the best for him. He was, come the third round, he was pushing a top 20. Just kind of fell apart a bit on Sunday for the T55 finish, but he's not missing cuts, only one missed cut so far this year, putting his number at 75% for the last 2 years in made cut percentage. That's the Tiger I'm looking for. I think he's going to keep making cuts here. I know that his accuracy off of the tee has been questionable, but that has been turning around. Last week, of course, with driving accuracy being, optional, he didn't really have to care too much, and he hit some beautiful drivers off the tee. But man, this week, I'm really feeling the Tiger. He's gaining almost a stroke approach. I know it was all about it last week, and he didn't do the greatest for me, but I'm definitely going to be there when Tiger gets his win back, and, you know, this is a great field for it. I think he can, it doesn't matter who he's with, and you know who he is with this week. He's with one, Phil Mickelson. Oh my gosh. I saw the Phil Gallery at Wells Fargo, and it was just giant, massive. It was insane. It was everything I thought Tiger's would be. His gallery was massive, and he was closing his round out right as Tiger Woods took place, and of course his gallery was just nuts. I could not imagine Tiger and Phil together, and throw in Ricky Fowler in that grouping. That is going to be a spectacular grouping to watch. Definitely going to be on that on Thursday and Friday. That's some must-see TV right there. But yeah, feeling Tiger Woods myself personally, but definitely GPP only with him. Hideki Matsuyama. Now, this is a nice-looking play here. I know he missed the cut by a stroke last week, but, man, 4-for-4 here. All top 25 finishes. Kind of a course horse in the making here. And, you know, I know he struggled a little tiny bit last week, but he's farther removed from his injury. He's at a discount for who he is, $8,500 for a guy who really is like a top 10, top 15 golfer in the world. You know, kind of price where he should be, but I don't feel like he should be cheaper than like Patrick Reed or Stenson right now. He really shouldn't be. He's a guy we'd see in the 9,000s in majors all the time, outside of maybe the Masters. But if, you know, I don't think he's going to be terribly popular, and sometimes that's all the reason you really need to take a guy here. But the course history is looking all right. Of course, that can end at any time. But, you know, as far as ball striking and stuff goes, that's usually his forte. He's not gaining as many strokes approach as some of these other studs, gaining exactly half of a stroke per round. But man, feeling the Matsuyama just because I think that he's going to be one of the sneakier plays. He wasn't that highly owned last week or at the Masters. And I think that that's a bit of a mistake. I think Matsuyama is going to get back into the form that we saw him over or be in over the last two or three years, which is just very, very good, very talented, has high win upside. If you go back through the long-term statistics here, you can see that he is finishing top 20 40% of the time. And of everyone that we've talked about so far, he has the highest average field strength. So he only plays with the best of them usually. He likes to go to the highest quality courses and events, and he does pretty darn well at them, making 89% of his cuts. And man, I don't know, I don't really need to justify it a little more. Loving me some Hideki this week, but the right now the highest projected guy we have for value of all of these studs here is one Phil Mickelson at $8,400. It surprised me a little bit, but then again, this price is quite surprising for Phil. He has been awesome this year. Lots of top 10, top 5 finishes, the win at the WGC Mexico. His course history here had been very shaky, 4 missed cuts in a row going into last year where he was able to squeak by, but he does have a win here a decade ago, but he's been super consistent. Fantasy points per hole, tied with several people right behind Justin Thomas for number one. He's very comparable to Dustin Johnson here, and if you look at the types of holes where we do have the most on this course, like the short par threes, he's the best of, by far the best of anyone that we've talked about so far in the short par three scoring category. Also good at the longer par fives and all sorts of par fours. He hits all the par fours pretty well. Just a really a high upside player and someone that I like attacking in those individual showdown rounds. 81% adjusted field rank, and that's much better than everyone around him in the $8,000 range. Feeling some Phil this week. Course history be damned. He's gaining tons of strokes approach and putting the lights out this season. The best putter that we have talked about so far on this podcast. In fact, the best putter in this entire field, going by adjusted strokes gained. Give me some Phil this week, and that's something you don't hear me saying a ton. Then you go to Bryson DeChambeau, $8,300. It's not a name you are used to hearing up here with the studs, and it's because he has 3 top 5 finishes in his last 4 events, runner-up at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, 3rd at the RBC Heritage, and last week finished 4th. Very good from him, but all the guys I've talked about so far, that average field strength stat, all between 3 and 4%, up to 5%, and he is at 0.5%. He is playing in much different fields than these guys, and despite all of that, his long-term made cut percentage of 59%, still very shaky. This time last year, he was missing cut after cut after cut. He's very, very streaky, very hit or miss. A GPP play for sure, but if you're telling me that Bryson is going to be popular with that game log, I could definitely see getting away from him. He is an awesome par 5 scorer. I will give him that. Awesome par 5 scorer, and with the 4 par 5s on the course, it really does make me think, but you know, all the numbers together, just, you know, still gaining strokes approach, which is good, but just in comparison to all the guys around him, Mickelson, Fleetwood, Molinari, Reed, Tiger, Matsuyama, I just really can't take them over, or I can't take him over these guys, especially if he's going to garner some ownership of that game log. Now, a guy that I have a newfound respect for, even though he missed his first cut this year, Tommy Fleetwood, $8,200 there. Saw him multiple times. He was working pretty hard on his putting with his putting coach. Was able to talk with him for a little bit. Real cool guy. We have that long-haired connection. And I went to go see him tee off. He was following Tiger Woods. So he had a pretty sparse gallery with everyone following Tiger. And I was right there with him teeing off, completely unsolicited. He just came up to me and said, "Hey, give me a thumbs up on the tee." With a head nod, which is that's amazing. I didn't see any of the other golfers doing that to anybody. So he remembered me, and it's I guarantee it's the the long hair aficionado appreciation, that mutual respect. I can't say anything bad about Fleetwood, and, you know, despite his horrible performance last week, he was putting up tons of birdies. He just puts up tons of bogeys. He got in so much trouble last week. Bombs it so beautifully, but boy, can he get himself in some trouble. Statistically, he's looking just beautiful still. 304 off the tee with 68% driving accuracy. He's just missing greens, 64% greens of regulation, and not gaining strokes approach, really gaining them all off of the tee. So I liked him a lot last week, and I would play him again if we did last week over, just because he really sets up for that. This course, not exactly, you know, just doesn't exactly make up the kind of play that we're going for here. But I do have some respect for Fleetwood. Debuted 41st here last year. I'll play him in some GPP for sure, but probably better to go a different route if you're serious about making some money in cash this week. And the core of everyone's cash game, I think, is going to be the next guy I talk about. Maybe not the core of everyone's, but he'll be a super popular play here. Francesco Molinari, $8,100. Awesome course history here. Four top 10 finishes in this last decade, but he does have three missed cuts also, all by one or two strokes. So real up and down hit or miss course history, but his last three finishes have all been in the top seven. He's been in some really good form, 16th last week, and he's been doing okay. We had a similar event in the Arnold Palmer where he had finished. His finishes were scarily similar to this event here, all in the top seven. Not in the top five, but in the top seven, that small, tight range. He had done the same thing at the Arnold Palmer and finished 26th there. I think Molinari is good for cash, and I think he's a good fade for GPP. Absolutely. He used to lead the stroke scanned approach numbers, and those have come down, just gaining a third of a stroke approach and putting very poorly. So I can see the reason for playing him in cash for sure, but for GPP, I would fade. Not fade completely, but I would definitely be underweight to the field if he's going to garner ownership. I need to be skipping down the field or else this is going to be a 10-hour podcast, I swear, because I want to talk about everyone here. Just going to go over some guys very quickly here. Bubba's in an interesting spot, has been playing well recently, and was always good at this course outside of a bad finish last year, and last year it was really an off year for him. I almost want to throw that out the window. Could play some Bubba here for sure. Norin at the event last week, he just spent all day on the putting green. And it's not even that he's a bad putter. He's a very good putter, gaining 0.6 strokes per round. Same amount of strokes that he gains approach per round. And he's been really good. Just, you know, someone that could go under the radar. I like Norin a little bit. And Matt Kuchar at $7,800. That is almost a serious mispricing here. Good course history, although he's missed two of his last three cuts here, both of them by just a stroke. In between that third in 2016, won this event in 2012, 17th in 2014, 13th in 2010. Some good finishes there, and you know he's like Kuchar, he's like Casey Light here. How consistent he is, that long-term 86% made cut percentage, and he plays like every event. 73% adjusted field rank, very good compared to all the guys around him. Greens and regulation, stroke scanned approach, he's usually better than he is right now, but still that's his general game. Like Kuchar this week in cash, and not on FanDuel, which is very expensive, but you know, I don't know about GPP, just because people will notice Kuchar down here, and he does tend to get pretty popular, so I don't know. Brooks Koepka, $7,700, made the cut last week, and that's important. I talked to him, asked him about the shoulder, and he said it was 100%, told me it was 100%, and he followed through with it, so a lot of his numbers are thrown off. He's not going to have a high projection, and you might need to change that in the domination station. Didn't want to do it manually for you guys, but he's had some very piss-poor finishes, dead last at like the Zurich Classic, the Hero, and just all the tournaments we've played in the last 6 months since he's been coming off of that wrist injury. But if he's 100%, and he kind of showed that last week, not only finishing 42nd in the event, but he finished runner-up to Tiger Woods in the Pro-Am, him and his team did, and it wasn't his team carrying him. I watched him play the first three holes, and all birdies, just beautifully hit. Loving what I saw from Brooks Koepka, and he had no ownership last week, like, at all. So his numbers are kind of up in the air. Just injury does that to you. But I'm liking me some Brooks if he is healthy. And he finished 16th last year, 35th the year before that. Some good reason to play him before his price goes up. And then if we go down through this mid $7,000 range, some very strong plays. Daniel Berger is a very good play. Cam Smith, very good play. Patrick Cantlay is a phenomenal play here. Good odds value. And usually he's someone who gains some more strokes approach than he does, but he has a really wicked mix of driving distance and accuracy, along with greens regulation percentage, that 94% long-term made cut percentage, 78% adjusted field rank. Statistically, he's a monster leaping off the page here. And Tony Finau, same story with him at 7.5. These are some super strong plays in the 7.5 range. The $7,500 range, you're just going to be smashing it. Anyone that price, you're going to be smashing it this week, I guarantee you. You've got Emiliano Grillo there, who's going to be the staple of cash game plays this week. He's made every cut this year, and 9th, 16th, and 3rd in his last few events. He's just been a monster, gaining those strokes approach. Just a ridiculous numbers from him in the driving accuracy and greens or regulation percentage numbers. Just awesome cash gameplay. And then you've got Brian Harman, who's going to be a ridiculous GPP play, because you've seen it this year so many times. He's just struck out of nowhere and gotten these top 10s and top 5s. And gosh, he missed the cut by a stroke last week. And he was the defending champion, but of course that was at a completely different course. He didn't really have the best history there at the Wells Fargo, the actual Quail Hollow course. And here, 8th place finish in 2015. Not the greatest finishes after that, but just some made cuts. Brian Harman's going to be ultra sneaky in GPP because of Finau, Cantlay, and Zach Johnson and Grillo in this range, just taking all of the ownership from him. And then, like I mentioned, Zach Johnson might be one of the highest owned plays on the entire slate. I don't know how the chalk is going to be spread amongst guys like Grillo, Finau, Cantlay, Zach Johnson. These are such off the backboard 360 alley-oop slam dunk plays. I mean, Zach Johnson, his course history here is immaculate. Probably the best track record of anyone here. Nothing but made cuts. 5th at the Texas Open last we saw him. It's been a cut made monster this year. Adjusted field rank of 76%. Very, very nice for where he's at. That made cut percentage of 80%. Gaining the strokes approach. That's just, he's exactly what you're looking for this week. In cash games, he's just going to be a staple. Probably well over 50% owned, if not like 70% owned. But who knows with Grillo right there and Cantlay right there. It's going to be interesting to see this week. We've got Luke List, who everyone's been on a lot. He had another top 10 finish, so he bounced right back from that miscut and is back in that crazy form. And he's gaining strokes everywhere right now, except for on the putting green. That's someone to really consider for GPP. And then just so many sneaky GPP plays this week in the $7,000 range. It's insane. Webb Simpson will gain some popularity here at $7,300. Very cheap for him, and he's been in some awesome form. If it wasn't for the fact that he finished 21st last week, I'd say he has 4 top 20 finishes in a row. But we'll go with 4 top 21 finishes for him. 16th last year. And strokes gained approach, that's his bread and butter there. The best in this entire range when it comes to gaining strokes approach is a guy that has been another top 20 monster. This guy's coming off of 4 straight top 20s. Chesson Hadley, the guy who played himself off the PGA Tour a couple of years ago. Went through the web.com tour, came back this season, and outside of some horrible finishes at less than driver courses at the Valspar and the Honda, other than that, he's been a machine. Top 5 finishes, top 10 finishes, including these 4 top 20 finishes in a row. Just been a monster with the irons, all of his irons. The average field strength, though, is pretty embarrassing to look at compared to everyone else in this range, minus 2.2%. I think that's one of the lowest numbers in the field. So, yes, he's quite the swing season god. But still, just he's been a machine, and he is so cheap still. He's just been very underpriced. One of the highest owned plays last week, and he hit for everybody. So get ready for some more ownership there. But, again, I don't know how this ownership's going to be so spread out amongst this field, or in this little range here. So all of these, like, all of these pivot plays are going to be really low owned compared to normal. Pat Perez, Ryan Moore, Byung-Hung Ahn, Xander Schauffele. Schauffele's a little sneaky. He's had two missed cuts in a row, but they were both by exactly one stroke. And Schauffele actually tied with Koepka there, finishing second at the Pro-Am last week. So just something to consider. And then you've got Adam Hadwin, who's been a monster this year. Just a monster. The odds books have never really liked him, but he's been a top 25 machine all year long. And did it again last week, 16th at the Wells Fargo Championship. Great par 4 scorer. Not long off the tee, but it doesn't really matter here. Everything else, greens regulation, stroke gained approach, just all awesome. All of his irons are on point. Wedges, long irons, regular irons. We don't see that very often where all of them are dialed in. That's Adam Hadwin for you. I'd definitely play him. And then my favorite play of the entire week, a guy who is just allergic to ownership. Might be a little bit higher owned this week, but this is someone who has constantly come in at under 2% ownership, including last week. Helped me win some cash. Nick Watney, coming off of the injury, turning his season around, and he has been a made-cut machine. Second last week, 20th the week before that, 32nd, 32nd, 33rd. He's just been super consistent, and last week he really came out of nowhere. He's always been an approach monster. That's always been his calling card throughout his career, so definitely looking to him a lot. Like Kyle Stanley a little bit here. Steele, Hoffman, a play that sticks out for sure. Just so many different plays you can make. This is just like a regular major where ownership's going to be pretty low. These guys at the bottom, and all these guys have legitimate chances of winning. We don't see anyone pass like 150-1 in this low $7,000 range. And usually in a normal week, we have plenty of guys 100, 200, 300, 400-1 in this range. So just so many plays to choose from. It's hard to even talk about them all. Charles Howell III, always a strong play. Even going down a bit lower, JB Holmes. I know that he doesn't set up all that well here, but he's had some success here. And at $7,000, Steve Stricker, very good at this track here, and going by adjusted field rank, he's up there with the studs, 78%. He really does well, and he loves to gain strokes approach, and he's one of the best putters of all time. He is someone to look for, maybe in cash. I don't know, he plays kind of sporadically for cash. We haven't seen him since the Houston, didn't play in the Masters, but he's definitely someone to circle on your sheet there. And then underneath $7,000, only a few key plays here. I know that Martin Kaymer has been tragically bad, and he's gone through some injury. So he's another one of these guys who's like Koepka, whose stats are kind of out the window right now because of that injury really threw things off. Before, he was a made-cut machine, making like 95% of cuts. It's been knocked down to 86%, but still good. He made the cut last week. Still horrible as ever at putting. I watched him on the putting green. He couldn't hit anything, but he's a former winner here, has made the cut every single year. So, you know, for what it's worth, Kaymer, 69th last year, didn't really pay off last year, but still, he makes the cut here oftentimes, and he's going to have no ownership because his game log looks tragic. But if he's feeling all right now, he could be a little sneaky. And for the same price, easily the highest projected guy we have here, Keegan Bradley, missed the cut by one stroke last week, but other than that, he's been a made cut monster, making 80% of his cuts long-term, and gaining strokes approached at a pretty good rate, almost one stroke gained per round, and that's one of the best marks that we've seen, barring the studs here in this entire field. If you think Chaz Reavie's turned it around, he really has the game for this course, I'd say. A few guys like that who had been in questionable form recently but should theoretically be good plays here, like William McGirt. Kokrak, I wonder whatever happened to Kokrak. He's missed four of his last five cuts, and they've all been by exactly two strokes, so that's interesting. But going down this range, really the bottom, it's hard to find tons of plays here, but Rory Sabatini at $6,700 on DraftKings and $7,700 on FanDuel, that's looking like a strong play. Last we've seen him here, finished sixth, has made a lot of cuts here, and he's had a lot of top 30 finishes so far this year and has really been making cuts. So Rory Sabatini, someone to look at for super punt, especially on FanDuel. He sticks out as a really huge value on FanDuel. Then at the bottom of the field, you have all the guys who are legitimate scrubs or guys who got a win recently and suck now, like DA Points, Von Taylor, guys like that, Danny Willett. So the bottom of the field you can definitely avoid because the low 7K range is just so chock full of chalk and great value. And that will do it for this pod here. Try and keep it under an hour. So have a great time watching this on TV. One of the best tournaments to watch, even if you're not huge on them calling it the fifth major. And that Tiger Phil grouping is going to be just awesome. So I will see you guys next week. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's the Byron Nelson or something next week. We'll see, but we'll be ready for it. And remember to check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. You want to come check us out just for that NASCAR content. It's been hot fire lately. And we did pretty well in the PGA last week as well. We had a guy win a qualifier. We had a few other GPP winners. I think someone won $900. Can't remember the username, but I think we had someone win $400 as well. Some good results there. So come check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. And this has been the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast. Good luck this week in your contest.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. Weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get 2 free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game. Game.